Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast hosted by two guys who were real embarrassed to be having a Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. We really like haven't quite committed to what level of embarrassment we're feeling, have we?
I have. I'm at the level of embarrassment that means that I'm wearing an Ortolan hood while recording the podcast now.
Our artwork says a bit embarrassed, but maybe we need to go back to the drawing board on that.
I'm all the way embarrassed.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've both been watching Star Trek The Next Generation for years. We're both huge fans, but it used to be something that we sort of just did when nobody else was around. This is not a show I can watch when my wife is even in the apartment. Like, it is not on the table.
Do you have to, when she comes home, like, do you have to hide the evidence that you've been watching it?
It's seriously more covert than masturbation in my life. This is episode 7, Justice. So the Enterprise has arrived at this planet called Rubicon 2, and Picard is, which already sounds dirty. Picard comments on how beautiful it is, and he says that they've sent a small away team to check the place out, interact with the inhabitants, and Riker saunters onto the bridge with just a fucking shit-eating grin coming back from this away mission.
Why is his uniform wet?
Yeah, in surprising places. And, you know, they kind of, like, this is all happening amidst the doctor coming on to the bridge to bark at the captain that they're all exhausted from colonizing this planet a couple of systems away. Everybody needs some shore leave. And
does she order him? Like,
she,
is that
she
is
doesn't quite get there, but she sort of insists.
She insists a little more full throatedly than she insisted that he submit to a psychological exam in the last episode, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, maybe she just had a big cup of coffee or something. This is the cold open of the episode before we go into our space, the final frontier opening sequence, and it literally ends with the line as Picard decides to authorize shore leave. Let's hope it's not too good to be true.
Let's just hope it's not too good to be true.
Which I feel like could be the beginning of like 75% of all Star Trek episodes.
Right. If it goes without saying, he says it.
Yeah. The away team beams down. I think it's Worf and Yar and Troy. Riker.
Before they beam down, just a second. Like they're talking about it before going back down, and they're using all this weird innuendo. Like they make love at the drop of a hat. Tasha Yar's like at the drop of any hat.
Right.
Any and every hat.
What does that mean? Like a Homburg or a Trilby? They don't draw a lot of distinctions between sombreros and ball caps.
That's that put this on knowledge that that I'm just not getting from you.
Oh man, the good folks that put this on will sue me if they hear me trying to associate myself with them.
Well, it's a good thing they nor anyone else are listening to the show.
So Wesley is also a member of this away team, and he's tasked specifically by the captain to assess the planet for whether it's good for children.
How old is Wesley, do you think? Like the character of Wesley?
Yeah, I don't know.
They refer to him as a child. But he's clearly like a teenager, right?
And he's definitely referred to as the boy a bunch of times in this episode again.
Yeah.
But he also
But it's not like he's a toddler. Like reviewing the planet for safety.
Right.
Like, it's such a weird thing. Like, he's a young adult.
He's definitely like there's grass on the field, to use a gross euphemism. So anyways, the scene where they beam down is really funny because the Edo, the natives of this planet that have met Riker and Yar already, like, run up to them, and Worf is like, "Yo, what the fuck?" And
they Riker's run up like, to them like
Riker's like, "Chill, chill. We know these guys." And then they start hugging everybody like, "Yo, we're definitely gonna fuck later."
is the message they're sending. Or like, we have already fucked before.
Yeah, we fucked already, and we're going to again. And I detected a little bit of jealousy in Troy when the hot babe was rubbing up on Riker.
Oh, all of them get a little bit of rubbing.
Yeah.
Save for Wesley, who awkwardly, like, isn't sure how to interact with anyone for some reason.
No, yeah, he's definitely in a little bit of an awkward phase at the moment.
if it's not a bald man, he's just not sure how to please that person. Yeah. We should talk about how these aliens look, these Edo. Like,
we should.
These are not fish people.
No.
These are not dog people.
They're described as almost identical to us, I think, in the beginning of the episode. So they are all blonde. So it's like kind of a Aryan master race of aliens. The women all have curly hair, and the dudes all have just kind of like 80s blonde dude haircuts. But they all are basically wearing like handkerchiefs that have been tied together strategically to hang off of their bodies.
Yeah. Just so. Like, if you were going to sit on any of the furniture, I think you'd want to put something down first. That's the level of coverage we're talking about.
Yeah. This is a level of coverage where, like, if this was a main cast character on any TV show at any point, if they got as naked as these people are, it would be like a very sexy moment in a television series. But these people are all just kind of running around like this. That's their normal way of life. They have a very hedonistic lifestyle.
They all look like Cinemax adult film stars. Like,
oh yeah, they definitely like there's a lot of
good looking enough that they're like on the line of severe looking.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot of early 80s era boob jobs on display.
A lot of Tory Spelling level, boob jobs.
It's like it's sort of like any like CG alien in a film in the like post Jurassic Park but pre I don't know like Avatar era where it's like I can see where you're going with this boob job, but it's not quite plausible.
It's like a weird combination of like Hitler's Final Solution fantasy and like late night softcore pornography.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's real weird. But everyone seems real nice. Like, that's another part of it. It's not like they look like they're filthy porn stars, but they are like sexy Mormons. They're really they're really nice and innocent sounding, I don't know. Like, there isn't that undercurrent of filth that you might associate with
it's not
with how we're describing them.
Yeah. So Wesley gets introduced to some kids, and everybody is running around having a blast in this paradise-like environment. And meanwhile, back in orbit, Data has been going nuts, picking up something off their starboard bow, and they send out a signal, and finally this thing reveals itself, and it's this massive object that's in orbit. It sort of looks like a space station or something, and it sends this like orb out through space, and it like floats up into the Enterprise and winds up on the bridge, and it's this kind of like aggressive beach ball that has a conversation with Riker, trying to determine what their intentions are. It has observed that they planted a colony a couple of systems away, and it's really concerned that they might be trying to do the same thing here. Picard assures them that that's not the plan, and then the beach ball like goes and attaches itself to Data's head, and Data falls over, and is like lying knocked out on the bridge while this thing kind of interfaces digitally with him.
With fingers or like a connection?
Yeah, I guess it's like attracted to the fact that he has a android mind. That's the kind of level that this beach ball is working on. It doesn't like the verbal communication so much.
Moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
There's a pretty funny scene where Yar and Worf are just like shooting the old breeze with a couple of the Edo, and they're like, yeah, like we kill anybody that commits any crime, and it doesn't really matter how small it is. No, like any small, insignificant crime, we will kill them dead. And Worf and Yar are like, we got to find Wesley. And then like smash cut to Wesley going long for a softball and crashing through a butterfly net into some flowers that were growing just beyond a white barrier. And just his luck, the only two cops on the entire planet happen to be very close by, and they run up, and they're also the only two like angry looking people on the entire planet.
Did you notice one of them was Thomas Keller?
The famous chef?
Yeah. He looked exactly like Thomas Keller.
Man, you know, I feel like I should know more what Thomas Keller looks like, given all of the Thomas Keller getting only two stars for Per Se that's been in the news recently. But
this security person is as angry as a Thomas Keller getting two stars.
Yeah.
Murderously angry.
Yeah. Yeah. And they... So they're kind of like getting ready to whip out their lethal injection when all of the rest of the away team runs up, and Riker like socks it to one of them, and Worf and Yar pull out their garage door opener grade phasers on them. And
it's really weird how these guys are getting thrown around and nothing's flopping out.
Yeah. The number of moose knuckles on the dudes in this episode is like is so fucking upsetting. Like it's like almost all you can focus on is just like, wow, like you can really see like the outline of the tip of his dick,
right,
in this costume.
Yeah, it's like so much putty.
Yeah. But anyways, the Edo are convinced to not kill Wesley immediately while they sort this out. And I guess this space station in orbit has been blocking communications between the away team and the ship. But once the sphere departs Data's body, they resume communication. And so Picard beams down to the surface and... you know, learns, you know, gets caught up, basically.
He watches the episode.
Yeah, might as well. And he basically says, like, we're not really down with your capital punishment situation, which the Edo take great umbrage at, which I thought was a pretty good moment. They're kind of, you know, like, you know, this is our law, and, you know, you can come here and tell us how fucking great and superior you are, but this asshole fucking broke our law.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, that's not being a very good host either. You don't tell people where the bathrooms are and where they can grab a bite to eat and like where they can park, and right, then not disclose that you will be immediately killed for trampling the flowers.
Yeah.
Like, I think they've got to take a little bit of responsibility, more responsibility than they take, which is none, for that oversight.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe they are a little bit more primitive than the crew of the Enterprise.
Where's that cop keep the syringe if he's wearing nothing but a towel?
Didn't he take it out like out of a belt? Or they had like slightly more garb on than, I mean, not like to the point where they didn't have moose knuckles or anything, but they did have like
at no point was there a lack of moose knuckle.
Yeah,
for any of the men on this planet.
Yeah, they're rocking a lot of nuck.
Rockin' nuck.
So anyways, Picard convinces one of the Ito to come back up to the ship after kind of saying, like, I'm not going to just unilaterally take Wesley back because the prime directive, yada, yada, yada. And so she comes up to the ship, and they go to the observation lounge, and she gets a load of the space station and sort of prostrates herself in the face of the glory of God. And we come to understand that the Ito worship this thing as a god thing, in Data's words. So then Picard goes and talks to Data, and like, in this is kind of like the part of the show where he's trying to kind of sort out what to do about Wesley, and every time he's got to sort of have a dispassionate conversation with somebody about what's going to happen with Wesley, the doctor finds a way of just kind of barging in and and like draping everything with all of the emotional baggage that it's going to have for her, which is like,
while also making clear to us, the viewer, that Wesley is her son.
Yeah, and it's plausible enough when she like bumps into him in the hallway, and then plausible enough again in the sick bay when he goes to talk to Data about what he has learned about this species that they've encountered in orbit through his mind meld or whatever. But then like
digital stimulation.
Yeah. But then Picard kind of goes back to his quarters with Data, and they're kind of having a discussion of the kind of tricky legal situation they're in. And the doctor walks into Picard's quarters, like, without ringing the doorbell or like requesting permission to enter or anything. She, like, the door opens and she just fucking walks right in.
Like, but she's there to borrow scarves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the third time now that the door mechanisms have really failed the people on the Starship Enterprise. But I guess Picard makes up his mind that Wesley is not going to buy the farm this day, and he beams down to the surface, and they sort of half-assedly debate the points of the case, but ultimately Picard is just like, you know what, your fucking law is kind of bullshit, and there's not really anything you can do to stop us, and I'm willing to take the chance that that thing in orbit will kill everybody on my ship in defiance of that law. And
Another example of Picard being super willing to sacrifice everyone's life.
Yeah.
Real cavalier.
Very cavalier. So they go to like beam up, and it's like this hilariously awkward scene where he's like, beam me up, and nothing happens, and everybody's like, which I feel like
it's gotta be the most embarrassing thing if you're in the Federation, is for that to happen.
It's like, hey guys, watch this, and then whatever you wanted to have happen does not fucking work out.
Like, after the last episode, Picard shows no weirdness about being transported anywhere, even though just moments before he was transported into a cloud.
Yeah.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to retain any kind of traumatic
memories. He's getting right back up on the transporter horse.
Yeah. So Picard just kind of like looks up at the sky and makes an appeal directly to the entities in orbit, as though he is talking angrily to God, and says, like, you know, like, justice is the ideal, and laws are not absolute, and you know, you can't just ensure, you know, you have to have exceptions to allow for justice ultimately. Because no two situations are the same. And I guess he's sort of making the case on both sides, on the Prime Directive side and on the side of the law that the Ito follow. And so the transporter beam goes ahead and engages, and we never hear from the Ito again. So I have no, like, we're never really left with any resolution about how they feel about the argument that he made, but he really makes this very, like, it's like a three sentence argument right at the end, and it like crystallizes the conflict that he's been having. But for almost whatever reason,
they're running out of time in the episode, and he has to really summarize everything.
Yeah, but the entity seems to be satisfied, and so it lets them go on their merry way, and it even lets them keep their colony a couple of systems away.
Yeah, so that's a happy ending.
Yeah,
on a planet full of them.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
The stuff with Wesley and the kids, like, this is kind of a Wesley-centric episode, and he runs around with these...
For his softcore pornography as it is, it actually is a very Wesley-centric episode.
Yeah, and like, and they definitely have a couple of, like, it's a little uncomfortable with the kids because it's like kind of, you know, children that are below the age of consent wearing the same extremely revealing clothing that the softcore porno performers are wearing.
Yeah, and they seem to get that they should go do their own thing away from the adults too. Like, I don't whatever her name is, the lead girl, the lead Ito, like says, yeah, maybe Wesley should go find some kids to play with while we bone down in our conference room.
These guys don't want to be ducking jisms the way they would be if they were stuck around here. But some point, one of the girls in Wesley's group goes like, Wesley, I want you to teach me something. And he's very demure. He's like, well, there's some games that I don't know yet. And she says, no, I want you to teach me to play ball, which is like not a euphemism.
I want to do something too with you.
What?
It's something you can teach me, will you?
Well, actually, there are some games I don't quite know yet.
It's playing ball. Will you teach me?
Oh, sure.
The Topanga character seems to be laying it on, like, pretty suggestively in Wesley's eyes. But unfortunately, she was just talking about playing ball.
That ball winds up getting him in a lot of trouble.
What did you think of the bro down between Worf and Riker when they're talking about doing it?
Yeah.
Remember that scene?
It was so Worf kind of tells Riker, like, I don't bang Earth women because I would have to restrain myself too much and it wouldn't be any fun for me.
What about plain old basic sex? You must have some need for that.
Of course. But with the females available to me, sir, Earth females, I must restrain myself too much. They are quite fragile, sir.
Worf, if anyone else had said that, I'd suspect he was bragging.
Bragging, sir?
Which is kind of in conflict with the way he greets the Ito at the beginning, because he's like, yo, nice planet you guys got here.
Did you get any detection of, like, Riker going, yeah, I hear that. Show enough. like almost like a mental rocks situation between the two, like maybe Riker understands Worf better than he did before.
I mean, it was either that or Riker was sort of distracted planning the next gash he was planning on stabbing.
How much sex do you think Riker had on this planet before beaming back up the first time?
Yeah, we don't really have any sense of how much time they spent on that first away mission. But judging by the look on his face when he comes back up, I mean, we know that Riker has a lot of depth and breadth to his sexual experience. And the look on his face sort of leads me to believe that he's kind of found a new nirvana.
It's joy like we've never seen on any character's face.
Yeah. There's one other, like, kind of random moment that I wanted to talk about in this episode, which is when they first have visual contact with the space station in orbit. They're having trouble scanning it, and the guy that's over on security where Yar would have been had she not been down on the planet says it's sort of there and not there at the same time. And Picard yells to Geordi, like, go get a real look at it. And Geordi, like, runs down to some other deck and just goes and looks out the window and then radios back up to the bridge based on what his visor sees, which implies that his visor is a way better sensor than anything on the outside of a fucking starship.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense. Why not just put a fucking visor out on the outside of the ship if it's so great?
Yeah, why not make Geordi into a hood ornament? And
yeah, bronze him.
Oh, man. There's a lot of things that don't make a lot of sense in this episode. That seems to be a theme of season one. What did you think of, like, all the running?
Yeah, so the people on the planet, the only way they get anywhere is by jogging. And it
felt to me like the away team pulled up to a Les Schwab tire center with a flat tire, and, like, everyone ran out to greet them. It was really weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is probably adaptive for their society because, you know, you need a lot of stamina to bone.
That's how you get so jacked.
Of times that you have to bone any given day. And yeah, like these people are super fit. Like all the dudes have like some serious pec action. Everybody's got a nice flat tummy. Everybody's got some moose knuck. I mean, there's
some righteous knuck.
Lot of eye candy in this episode.
Serious question. Do you think this is actually the most racist episode that we've seen so far?
Against white people?
I don't know. Like, the whole Final Solution planet is really weird. It kind of squicks me out. They're all white and blonde.
Yeah.
They evidently have formed a perfect society without any crime.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
The only way that's plausible is if, if there's no mixing of
right. Of that's the what reason. I'm getting at. It was gross. In that way.
Yeah, I suppose the kinds of imaginations that would come up with the race in episode 3 would come up with the race that we are currently dealing with. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably kind of a continuation of that same racism.
Yeah, it made me uncomfortable in a lot of ways, this episode.
Yeah.
Also, the thing that made it the most memorable, I think of all the season one episodes, this is the one that felt the most familiar.
Yeah, yeah. This one
it seemed like the outlier.
Probably stuck in my memory as much as any episode from season one, for sure.
It's also one of the ones that really boil down into a single sentence, like slug line in the writer's room, much like the "What if the crew gets drunk?"
Yeah.
Episode. This one's like, what if they find an orgy planet?
Yeah. What could there be wrong with that orgy planet? Yeah. I was thinking about that what if the crew all got drunk premise. That was the second episode. Yeah. And I feel like that is such a fun premise to explore when you've really developed a series. Like, if that was in the third or fourth season, I think it would be really interesting because we would really know a lot about the characters.
Yeah.
And, I mean, same thing here. Like, the kind of couple of away team members we see get to interact with this orgy planet, like, it's used for character development and not to kind of deliver the promise of the premise of these characters, which, missed opportunity, in my opinion.
So many missed opportunities. I have a very serious question to ask you.
Yes.
Who is your drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
You know, my gut is just that it's the doctor, because I feel like she is just constantly kind of not, you know, where she's not wanted. Like, the captain keeps needing to be, you know, making a decision given the facts and not given the kind of emotional baggage of the situation, and she just will not relent in injecting that emotional baggage wherever she can find a place to inject it.
Good pick. God, I feel like we should be keeping track. Has Beverly been given the drunk Shimoda before?
I don't think I have. I actually have it written down on all my notes, so
oh,
we could like make a
Put that on the website.
Make a power ranking on the website. Yeah, not that we actually have a website.
Put that on our show notes.
Yeah.
My drunk Shimoda vote is going to be for... so there's like the lead Ito female, and then there's sort of her compatriot, the real He-Man looking guy.
Yeah.
I didn't get his name, but I'm voting for him. Because there are about five times during this episode where he's very clearly like speaking swingers rules to people in a like there's an air of confident swinger about him that is so creepy that sounds like a drunk person. Like he says specifically, no one does anything uncomfortable to them. Like that's one of their main rules.
Yeah.
And that like if you read any like Dan Savage, like any of his columns or whatever, like that is a major like swinging rule that I just laughed out loud at. It was super funny. He's like, he just sprinkles them throughout the episode in a really like matter of fact, cool guy way. One could argue a drunk Shimoda style way. And so that's why he gets my vote.
You know, the swinging movement, I think, was founded by like fighter pilots, from you know, post-World War II era, and he really kind of fits that mold as well in a lot of ways. He's kind of like a Top Gun type jock character. So, and like the idea of like there being like regulations for a sexual encounter, like kind of fits into that mindset. He may be a real life swinger.
Are you saying that swinger subculture was in fact started by the Greatest Generation?
Wow, we've hit on something very important in this episode.
I think we're through the looking glass right now.
Yeah, I think we need to go deeper. And so does Riker.
Hashtag Greatest Gen.
Tomok Angelad at Tanagra.
Okay, so in the next episode, episode 8, The Battle, a thought-altering device controlled by a Ferengi captain seeking revenge on Picard for his son's death threatens the life of the captain and the safety of the Enterprise. I remember this episode. They, like, find weird orbs in people's quarters, right? And, like, the captain is, like, beaming into different parts of the ship, and, like, they can't figure out how he's doing it. Does that sound right?
Yeah, sort of. I don't remember much about this episode, to be honest.
I can't remember what son this Ferengi captain would be revenging on, though.
Yeah, and it's not like...
Did they kill a Ferengi in that first Ferengi episode? I don't remember that happening.
Yeah, I don't think it did. And I think the character of Picard is capable of a lot of crimes. But murder doesn't seem to be one of them.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see what goes down with our second encounter with the worst alien race in the Star Trek canon.
Yeah, I mean, if it's called The Battle, I'm pretty excited for actual space battles.
Yeah.
You know, like science fiction should have.
Right. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get a little bit of that nuck in this, but probably not.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the Ferengi bring some...
They've got head nuck, don't they?
They got nose knuck for sure.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode, I think.
I think that's we've said all that there is to be said about the episode of Justice.
Favorite episode of the season so far, I think.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of eye candy, a lot of crotch candy. Yeah, good times.
A lot of feelings.
A lot of feels. With that, we'll be back at you next week with another exciting installment of The Greatest Generation.
That's right. If you have any comments, I guess, be sure to reach out with us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm saying that just to my mom and dad, who are the only ones listening.
Yeah. That.
and your mom and dad, Ben.
Yeah. Both of whom actually have Twitter accounts.
You know what?
Embarrassingly enough.
If they do, I'm going to ask him about that whole summer camp story. We've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Oh boy. Oh, let's let that never come up again.
I'm gonna bring it up every chance I get. All right, see you next time.
I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica.
Bye.
Good show, young chap.
The boy?
That'd be so great. I ask your mom and dad about you, and that's their response. The boy? Young Wesley?